And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Join us this Saturday for an all-new episode of The Athletic NBA Show, Saturday Slammin' Jam, hosted by me, Andrew Schlecht. I'll be joined by my co-hosts Alex Spears and many of the Athletic beat writers that you know and love. We will recap the week of the NBA, play some NBA trivia, and just overall talk about the league that we love most. So while you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee on Saturday morning, listen to Saturday Slammin' Jam on The Athletic NBA Show.
Yo, it's Zach Harper, host of the Basketball Buds, right here on The Athletic NBA Show. Join me and the fellas, Waz, Trey, Jay, and Dave, for a new episode every Monday morning. What's Jay King going to say that lights the podcast on fire? What's that problematic envelope that Waz is going to keep pushing? Every single Monday, tune in to find out. That's every Monday morning right here on The Athletic NBA Show.
Welcome to The Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday,
on The Athletic Podcast Network.
On today's Nerd or She Wrote, we're going to talk about how things are going to change in the Western Conference. We're going to talk about Luka Doncic's play-in tournament comments and preparation for the playoffs.
This is Nerd or She Wrote with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
Welcome to Nerd or She Wrote. I am not Dave Dufour. I'm Mo DeKeel, joined by Seth Partnow. We got John Hollinger because Dave decided to just take a vacation. That's nice, Seth, isn't it?
Yeah, in-season vacation. I don't understand this. This is not something I'm familiar with.
Yeah, like I never could as a video guy. It wasn't like I could just be like, oh, I'm taking the day.
Yeah, yeah. Or, you know, working, you know, in an NBA front office. Like, yeah, look, guys, I know the draft is next week, but like y'all got this under control, right? Like I'm just going to check out.
Yeah, so, you know.
I ran the model. What more do you need from me?
Exactly.
nothing left. Nothing
this
left.
This is what the simulation says. So, I mean.
Forget it. We're not even going to talk basketball. We're just going to trash Dave for the next hour.
That might get better ratings.
No, we got it. Let's get right into it, though, guys. Obviously, everybody knows by now the Jamal Murray injury out for the year with the ACL. Crushes Denver. I mean, Seth knows I've been on the like, hey, Denver's probably the second best team in the NBA. And they legitimately had a chance to me to get to the finals. But now it's not even so much looking at Denver, but how does this change for everybody in the West? You know, just kind of looking at it up and down the standings.
Well, I think the biggest thing is now suddenly that five seed becomes really valuable, right? Whereas previously, and I actually wrote about this the day before Murray hurt his knee, that the Lakers were sort of this wild card because you had four good teams at the top of the West, and then the Lakers were probably going to be 5, 6, 7 or somewhere. And there could be a lot of seeding shenanigans the last week of the season, depending on where that Laker matchup went. Well, now, if you look at Denver, maybe hanging on to four or being five or something, like you want to get into that 4 or 5 bracket if you're anyone else in the West, if you're the Lakers, if you're Portland, if you're Dallas. And so that race all of a sudden becomes really important because your first round becomes so much more winnable. I mean, Denver's still a decent team without Murray, but I think it's a team that people regard as one they could easily beat in the first round, especially, you know, if you're the Lakers and you beat them last year in 5 games, certainly you feel like that's one you can handle. So getting to 5 now becomes a big thing, I think, in the West.
I kind of think for everybody but the Lakers, that's selling the Nuggets too short. I don't think they have really much equity as a finals team anymore, but yeah. I still wouldn't wanting. I'm not sure I'd want to play them in a playoff series now. I mean, they still have the guy who's going to win MVP, and
if the alternative is playing the Clippers or Phoenix or Utah, would you much rather play Denver?
Yeah, no, I agree with that, but I don't think we want to push it too far and say they're going to be, you know, like they're not going to be the Bulls after, you know, Derrick Rose blew out his knee.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's right. I think it is worth making that distinction, but
yeah, it's not like they're getting swept. I wouldn't see them getting swept in the first round. You know, Jokic can win you a couple of games in a playoff series. I am concerned about them in a first round matchup though, really against anybody, just cuz how important Murray was in that two-man game him and Jokic has. He doesn't have that chemistry with anybody else on that team. He's not even with Porter. You know, like, they just don't have that yet, and I think that's a concern. But John's point of, like, that fifth seed's going to be really important. Right now, we're recording on Thursday. Lakers have it. They're a game and a half up on Portland, who's at six, and Dallas is at a game behind Portland. So I'm not going to do the math because, you know, that's three and a half. There we go. I did it in my head. I'm very proud of myself. But that becomes the real interesting thing is, you know, I think the Nuggets is going to could drop a little bit too, though. I mean, they're only a game up on the Lakers. You know, I could see them dropping out of four, you know, and even possibly out of five if a team gets hot.
We give the Lakers a touch of credit here, by the way. They're either, I'd have to look again exactly which game LeBron went out, but they're either 6-7 or 7-7 in the stretch they've played without LeBron and AD. And they haven't played the toughest schedule. And I don't think they've really, none of their wins are against, you know, top quality teams. But still, without their two stars out, they're doing a good job of taking care of business of kind of the lesser teams in the league. And I think that's been, for a team that we've thought has been going to be very top heavy, I think that speaks well to their sort of robustness as a team, that these other guys can take care of those of you know, the Charlottes of the world, shall we say.
Yeah, they've managed to tread water really nicely. They even got a win in Brooklyn, an easy win in Brooklyn. And they've still defended really well, even without LeBron and Davis, which I think is a surprising thing. And a lot of credit to Frank Vogel for having those guys, you know, prepared scheme-wise and preparation-wise to take this on. They probably have to tread water for about two more weeks until the Cavalry comes back. They do have some really tough games coming up now, so it still could get interesting. They have a back-to-back again in Dallas, especially, where the Mavs could make up some room on them. But so far, so good. You know, people were worried the bottom would fall out, and that hasn't happened.
I mean, that's the impressive part. 4-3 on that seven-game long road trip without those guys. And, you know, John touched on it. Their defense hasn't dropped off at all. Like, that's kind of the more thing I'm looking at. Like, I was surprised by all of that. You know, once LeBron went out, I was like, okay, well, they're not going to be able to score and they won't stop anybody. And no, I was wrong. They are stopping people. And it's pretty impressive in that sense. When you look at the other teams in the West, you know, like, with Denver kind of sort of being out of finals contention at the very least, you know, I look at it going, like, this opens the door for teams like Phoenix or the Clippers. Like, the Clippers are playing really well right now, winning seven in a row. Paul George is in a good groove, even though he sat out their game against Detroit for rest. But, like, they're rolling pretty well. I kind of like this Clippers squad a little bit coming together with Rondo. But what, you know, this opening the door for other teams in the playoffs, you seeing guys kind of getting a little more
we'll get back into this a little later, but it's just so weird because teams all season have been, you know, a team with the possible exception of Phoenix, who've just been like steady and good. Every other team seems like they're having these dips, and it's like, oh, they're you know, settling back into a different, and then they jump back up again. So yeah, the Clippers are playing like really well right now, but it's still, with all the weirdness of the season and the absences and the compressed schedule, I feel like we've hit this note four or five times in the show. It's just, I feel less able to predict what teams will look like in the playoffs than perhaps any season that I can remember, both because of the kind of the tightness of the teams together, but also I just don't know what we're seeing night in and night out from teams.
What about Utah, guys? I mean, they're kicking the shit out of everybody in the West. Should we maybe talk about them?
No. No. I mean, that's the thing. They've been extremely dominant all season for the most part, you know, a blip here and there. And nobody really kind of trusts them or cares about them in the playoffs. And I think part of it is, you know, like, do we trust Donovan Mitchell to be your go-to guy to get you a bucket down the stretch of a playoff game?
They feel, I mean, it's a very similar vibe between them and the Bucks, right? It's, you know, they do amazing things in the regular season. And then we've seen certain things happen in the playoffs, and the narrative is probably even a little more unfair in Utah because, you know, Mike Conley's shot doesn't rim out last year, and we think completely differently about this team. But there's such the track record of, well, it's just not going to work in the playoffs that I think we're going to need to see it before we believe it. And I don't know if that's fair or not, but that's the reality.
I mean, and we've gone through this before though, right? Like we went through it with Jordan, like, or Dirk, you know, with Dallas, like until they win, like the perception of them is so skewed. I don't know. I think sometimes we're too caught up in the fact that because in the recent history, this team hasn't won, it means they will never win. And that clearly is not true.
Yeah. That only applies to the Clippers. Sorry, cheap shot. No,
no, the Warriors weren't ready until they were. And then all of a sudden they were very ready. And it's, you know, there was, you remember, John, when you guys were up 2-1 on them, it's like, see, jump shooting team can't blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And then oh, wait, we just won't guard Tony Allen. And he's maybe a little hurt. And then, oh, no, it's fine. We're fine.
Yeah.
And you're just trying to pull up old wounds like this is your.
No.
We won two games, but they had an awesome team. And I think people were too quick to dismiss the fact they had an awesome team all year. I mean, I wish Mike and Baino and Tony had been healthy that whole series. I wonder what might've happened in that case, but the fact is they beat us 4 times by double figures. Like they were good.
Yeah. I think you touch on a good point there. And this is something people don't like to acknowledge, but luck plays is going to play this year. I don't know, more than a year, but every year luck plays a huge part in who ends up winning the title. And it's oftentimes it's not even that the team that ends up winning got lucky. It's quote unquote, they avoided bad luck. They avoided an ill-timed ankle turn. They avoided, you know, Denver's kind of hit the whammy, unfortunately. And that not happening to you is the form of good luck. And that was, frankly, a huge part of the Warriors, you know, being in 5 straight finals is they largely avoided that. And that's, you know, it's not something you can control for. You try to give yourself the best chance, but with it so close this year and, you know, not knowing about so many guys' health, that's going to be a huge part in how this shakes out.
Yeah, and then, of course, there's also going to be a random COVID protocol guy out, you know, like there's a whole element of variables that were like, we just don't even know how we're going to combat that come playoff time. What's the top six teams and in the West? Let's take the Lakers out of it because we know if they're healthy, everybody's going to kind of pick them. But who's the team that you think can surprise everybody and get out of the West in that sense? I think it's pretty wide open, assuming the Lakers are not fully there. Where do you guys see it?
Are we calling Utah a surprise at this point?
No, a surprise was like probably a bad word.
I'm sort of amazed how, like,
you're right.
Dismissive everyone is of them with how well they've played this season. I mean, I get some of the misgivings, right? They don't have like a lot of size at the 3-4 to guard like a Kawhi or LeBron one-on-one. And, you know, maybe if you play with a stretch big, you can pull Gobert away from the hoop. And they don't have the one alpha scorer. It's more of a distributed thing. But that said, I mean, they're fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth best players are better than your fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth best players by a pretty considerable margin. And I think they've shown that this entire regular season. And you look historically, I mean, teams that are this dominant in the regular season don't just go away in the playoffs.
Right. And you mentioned like the kind of the matchup stuff. If we're talking about the team that's the biggest beneficiary, unfortunately, of the Murray injury, it's probably Utah, because that Jokic was the single worst matchup for them in the Western, in kind of the way through the West. And, yeah. You know, I still think they probably wouldn't mind not playing Denver, but it's not the same thing in terms of having a guy who both Gobert is the guy who has to guard Jokic, and Jokic can drag him all over the floor. And I don't think anyone else, maybe AD if he's hitting jumpers.
No, but I think AD does. I think that's something we've seen from the Lakers. You know, last season, you know, when they were playing Utah, put AD at the five and it would just automatically pull him out. You know, I think the Lakers would have been a bigger concern for the Jazz. Now, unfortunately, the way it's looking is they might actually end up facing them in the second round. I think their hope was Clipper Lakers, you know, 2-3 battle it out, and then they get to kind of face off, you know, and face one of those teams in the Western Conference. I think AD poses a bigger problem for them than even Jokic, for that matter.
That could be. I mean, it's also that AD is the second best player on the team, which is that LeBron guy is probably, you know, but yeah, that's a fair point. I think you mentioned the team that I would say is, I mean, it's, I still think the Clippers are the second most likely team. I mean, if we're going to, we know I love tiers. If we were going to tier them, we would put healthy Lakers one, I think Jazz and Clippers on that next line down, and then the Suns by themselves, and then kind of everybody else. Am I missing somebody?
I think that, I mean, that's probably where I'm at with it. You know, I think the Suns could be interesting. I don't buy the hype that they're going to be able to get to the finals. I know everybody's going nuts about Chris Paul's revitalization and really the what he adds to that team. But the thing I sort of look at is like, I love him, but like his playoff record sometimes, like he makes some bad mistakes in the playoffs sometimes, and it tends to hurt you. And then you have guys who have never been in the playoffs, which I'm a believer in the experience matters to a degree. And I think that's something that's going to be an issue for them moving forward. So I'm not as high on them as everybody else, but like, I mean, they're interesting.
You also have a guy who's going to be coaching for one of his first times in the playoffs. Like, I think people don't think about the playoff experience of the coach sometimes too.
Up and down the organization.
Mighty Williams just had the one series in New Orleans, right?
Yeah. I would say up and down the, like, you know, I think you two probably understand this as well as most. Like, the first time you're there, it sounds like a weird thing to say. Oh, it's different when you get to the second, third round of the playoffs. But I know I experienced this when we went to the conference finals. It's like, well, this is different. Like, there's, you know, the inside the NBA guys are here, and there was just having not, you know, coaches, organization, everything. It's, there is a certain amount of going through that you can't simulate, as much as you know it's going to be harder until you actually do it. And, you know, really the Suns have two players who've been there, but from an organizational standpoint, if they don't know what any of that's about.
Yeah. The other thing with Phoenix, I mean, they've been completely healthy the whole season. And so I think that's allowed them to, like, the standings flatter them basically, because they haven't had to go through some of the stuff that some of these other teams have gone through. But in the playoffs, when it's full strength against full strength, that advantage kind of goes away.
Yeah, it's interesting in that sense. I mean, like, Seth, you touched on it. I went from the Clippers when we were just god awful to San Antonio, and seeing the experience of us going, like, okay, we're going to the playoffs, and all the work that goes into the playoffs. Like, I don't think I left the facility for like 3 days. You know, like, just preparing film and getting ready. And we had one of those things where it was so up and down, and we weren't sure where we were going to be. We weren't as good as we were supposed to be that year. It was our first year with Richard Jefferson, and we ended up being, I think, the 7 or 6 seed or something. We played Dallas in the first round, but I just remember all the work they going into it and going like, man, when I was with the Clippers, it was like, yo, we were planning vacations. We knew April 15th was the end of the season for us. And where were we going April 16th?
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And that leads to the more interesting thing too now, is because now that we're in the last kind of like 15 to 20 games, you know, these teams that know they're going to make the playoffs are beginning to look at playoff matchups, potential playoff matchups. I think, John, you said earlier we might see some shenanigans in terms of the standings and trying to get into positions here. But just leaning on our experiences, I want to hear about your guys' experience on the lead up to the playoffs. You know, John being in the front office, Seth is in the analytics department, and me in the video room. I think we have a unique perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the video room gets its ass kicked on this the most by far, so because you basically have to have those preps ready to go when the buzzer goes off after the final game of the regular season. Yeah. And we've had, I want to say, in 2015, I think we had like the last day, going to the last day, we had maybe 5 different potential opponents. And then as an added bonus, we had a 7th game where the other team in our other side of our bracket was also playing a game 7. So our video had to prepare 2 different books for the second round to be ready after that game 7, which they were also assuredly crashing on the prep for the 7th game. And then we lost that 7th game, so all their work went down the toilet. So.
Oh, it's the worst. That's the worst. You have to know in the video room, 90% of this is going away. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, if you're preparing for 5 teams, you only can play 1.
Yeah.
So, exactly. You know, we definitely had that experience. And I agree with you. It's, you know, it is more work for the analytics group, but it's not quite the same kind of exponential explosion, because it's actually, you know, you do some individual stuff on each team, but in terms of like the broader stuff you do, it's not actually that much more work to, you know, have your processes run on 5 teams rather than 1. Now you probably end up helping assemble the binders and stuff like that a little bit more for the video guys who are getting buried. But
yeah,
there's still there's the standard stuff you want to do for every team, but then there's like the intricacies that you want to get into. And it is that little bit more work of like, okay, the top 3 or 4 guys, the top couple pick and roll combos, what is it that they do? Is there anything we can pick out that's going to tell, is there anybody who on their team, it's unusual? Now, this was probably more of a thing that we worried about in like 2017 than now, because everybody does it. But like then it's like, okay, who runs to the 3-point line on a fast break versus goes to the rim? Who likes to Euro in transition and who doesn't? Like even those kind of things were stuff that we were trying to just anything to help with that little bit of a prep edge. And you know, the more teams you look at, the harder it is to dig really deep into all those things.
And the binders are the worst things, by the way, just the physical binders aspect of it. Like, John, you mentioned kind of going into game 7. We traveled from LA to Memphis to play game 7 in 2011. And, you know, we had to have the binders ready for if we won, we were playing the Spurs.
Yeah.
And those are heavy as hell. And do you know who had to carry it? the video guy.
Yeah.
Some bullshit. Yeah. it's just all of those things that go into. I don't think people understand. Like, Doc was adamant as soon as the first game ended, as soon as the last game ended, the books had to be on everybody's chair. And luckily we're on the West Coast, so it was a little bit easier because all the games would end that night and we would know. But that year we had a bunch of books set up. You know, we ended up playing the Warriors, but we had a few others ready to go. And it's just so challenging, all the preparation that goes into it, you know. And from the front office perspective, though, like, how involved are you? I know obviously you're not breaking down film or anything. It's a little bit different from that view, but how are you viewing the prep for the playoffs?
It changed every year. I'm trying to think what would be quote unquote a typical experience. Because on the front office side, we were doing a lot of our draft work too, especially on overseas guys. Then,
right.
I mean, the Hoop Summit is the last week of the season. The Jordan Classic is happening then. So you're doing a lot of your work on that front too. The Final Four has just ended. So
the combine is at the end of the second round.
What's that?
The combine usually falls right around the end.
And then the combine's right at the end of the second round. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, I'll say our level varied with that some, and sometimes it was just, one or two of us were working on that, and one or two of us were working on the other stuff. The 1 year I'd say we really got in pretty deep with it was actually we had enough time to know. So we're in a 4-5 series in the first round in 2015, and we really did some deep dives on Golden State because we knew they were going to be our opponent in the second round, and we basically had 2 weeks to get ready for it. I think that actually really helped us with that series, just in terms of having some ideas of what we were able to really drill down on the games that they lost that year, which weren't that many, and sort of look at, okay, when they lost, what did it look like? What happened? Were there keys to it? And I think we were able to help Jaeger build a pretty decent game plan around that.
Seth, what is it from the analytics perspective, though? Like, what are you guys looking for? You know, like, I like that John mentioned, like, looking at how other teams lost. Like, that was something we would try to do is, like, all right, what were the teams that beat them very well doing? You know, on the analytics side, what is some of the stuff you would be looking for?
I mean, that's an interesting one because those indicators are sometimes, you know, there's a little bit of a what did he hit on the second half of doubleheaders after the seventh inning on Tuesdays?
Right.
You know, some of those things.
You do got to make sure you're not looking at noise. I agree with that. Yeah.
It's like, you know, okay, you'd think, okay, what's the one characteristic of Golden State's losses that year? They probably shot like crap. Okay. So if they miss all their open jump shots, we win. That's great. That's nice.
Yeah.
Some of that, I think at this point, you know, where there's a little bit further away, there is some input in if there's something we can pick up on someone we'd rather play or not. And even that gets tricky at times. I remember 1 year while LeBron was still in Cleveland, they were one of our possible playoff matchups. And it was like, you know, by everything, like from a regular season statistical standpoint, we would have wanted to play them. But no, you just, okay, but LeBron. So no, we don't want to play them. So like put that in trying to find a way to message that wasn't like, but I don't actually, without making it seem like none of the metrics matter, just knowing that like, okay, playoff LeBron is different. So let's put that aside.
That's interesting. Play. There was 1 year where we had potentially had some agency over our playoff opponent. We did end up with a discussion of who do we want to play. That was, and it wasn't totally clear who would be in our best interest to play. That was an interesting one.
I mean, the year we had the most agency, because I think we played some of the teams, was 2019, and like we were good enough that we didn't care. So so that was, you know, the other years where there's so much going on, we were just trying to make sure we got in almost. But then that year is like we're much like whoever finishes eighth in the East, we're much better than. So who gives a crap?
Right. Well, yeah. it's interesting because now we talk about that stuff and you're looking forward to the play-in tournament, and that's going to add a wrinkle just in the preparation aspect alone for the top teams, because now they got to watch the tournament and figure it out and things like that. I think do we feel like it's a little bit of an unfair advantage to them, or does it even matter? Because, you know, like Utah's so good. Are they really going to lose to any of these teams that they might face in the first round?
Are you saying they're at a disadvantage because they don't have as much time to prepare for their first round opponent potentially?
Yes, and I feel very bad for their video guys.
Solidarity. I mean,
who cares? I can tell by John's face. Like, who cares?
We're like, eh.
Well, but in a year like this year where it is so close, and maybe even having to go one extra game in the first round, like that, I would think you would prefer not to have to do that. So even if you end up a little like caught aback by something that happens in like the first game of the series, and you know, okay, we kind of unluckily dropped the first game, now we have to go six instead of five. I mean, even that, again, where everything is so close, like you talked about Utah being like dominant across the year. As I wrote earlier this week, that yes, they have been the best team kind of across all opponents this year. But in terms of their ability to beat the other best teams, they've been one of the worst best teams that we've seen. They're mm-hmm. they have been the best, but they haven't separated by as much as kind of usually the team you expect to go for. So with those margins a little bit smaller, it maybe doesn't matter for the first round, but maybe that like cumulative thing of having to go through, you know, three, four series, maybe there's a slight thing there. But at the same time, I mean, would you rather play New Orleans or Portland? Like, I think Portland's a better basketball team. So sure. I'd rather play the worst basketball team. And even if it may end up getting a little surprising in game one.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Mm-hmm. Well, this leads us to our next topic, though, which is Luka Doncic came out very upset about the play-in tournament. His quote was, "I don't understand the play-in. You play 72 games to get in the playoffs. Then maybe you lose two in a row and you're out of the playoffs. I don't see the point." Then Mark Cuban chimed in, "The worst part of this approach is that the double stress of the compressed schedule. Rather than playing for a playoff spot and being able to rest players as the standings become clearer, teams have to approach every game as a playoff game to either get into or stay in the top six, since the consequences, as Luka said, are enormous. So players are playing more games, more minutes, in fewer days. In hindsight, this approach was an enormous mistake." How much of this has to do with the fact that they are seven?
Oh, 99. How dare you? Oh, my goodness. I can't imagine why Cuban would say such a thing just because of that.
You know, I mean, he voted for it. I mean,
that was my initial reaction, is what he's really saying is we thought the play-in would be for other people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And instead it's for them. Now, it's true, they had to compress the schedule by five more days or whatever in order to accommodate the play-in. And so they're paying for it right now because they do have too many games in too little time.
That was going to be the case with or without the playoff game, though, wouldn't it? Isn't it?
What's that?
You, even if you add five more days to the season, yes, that's a little bit more stress, but the season was already going to, you're trying to cram 72 games into the amount of time they had.
It made a bad math problem worse, yeah, right? It forces more back-to-backs, four and fives, five and sevens, whatever. The rest of Cuban's statement is actually a good thing. Our product between the trade deadline and the start of the playoffs mostly sucks, right? Yep. And anything that we can do to incentivize competition in that stretch is a good thing. So I think revising the lottery odds and creating the play-in are great for that. That we're getting a lot more March and April games and May games, I guess, now this year, where teams will actually have their best players on the court and actually be trying to win.
Yeah, games matter at this point of the situation. Yeah. You know, I've not been the biggest fan of the play-in tournament, just the concept, you know, because I was always saying, like, you play a whole regular season deal.
Yeah.
But I also understand it's an entertainment product, right?
That's the whole thing that we have to remind ourselves sometimes. Like, it's kind of a hokey and seemingly unfair way to decide things at a micro level.
Why is it hokey? You knew at the start of the season you need to finish sixth. Win your games, finish sixth. I have no sympathy for it's like there's nothing not in their control that kept them from being better, other than
if I finish 13 games of the freaking Wizards and they still steal a playoff spot from me at the end, I'm still pissed.
Right. Okay?
But I think you get back to the point of this is entertainment at the end of the day, and the entertainment value of this sport is increased tremendously by doing this, especially when it's not coming at the expense of top seeded teams getting knocked out right away, which I think is how, I think that's why they went from best of three to best of seven in the first round, for instance. So they're like, okay, we can't be losing, you know,
right.
Can't be losing our defending champion Lakers in a best of three series in the first round anymore. So,
yeah, and yeah, that's
go ahead, Mo.
No, I just think that's the interesting aspect of it, is look, the Mavs are going to be fighting like hell to get out of the seven seed, right? And it's going to make for entertaining basketball. And we're going to tune into Portland. We're going to tune into Dallas now to see where these teams match up, because that's who they're chasing, you know? And in this instance, you know, if it was just a normal playoff scenario or normal year, you know, they're two and a half games above eight, they'd be a little bit feel more comfortable. I like this. I like that. I've revised myself in the sense of this is more entertaining. This is a better product.
It boggles my mind that someone would think that it's a complaint but now we have to win a game is actually a cogent complaint about the system. Like, it's not like you flip a coin and you're out.
Right.
No, win a game. You have two chances to win a game. After you had 72 chances to not have to play in that game, and you're going to complain to me about this? No, I'm not having it.
Yeah, it's that simple. And listen, if they're seven, they should be able to beat Memphis. I mean, we just saw Luka hit the crazy game winner to do that. But that,
at least it wasn't a bank shot.
From half court. Sorry, UCLA. But like, it's a fun, like, these are going to be fun games. We saw it in the play-in turn. I mean, in the bubble, like how fun that was watching those teams go at it. Now that we're winding down the show, I want to do the typical Dave Dufour. Hey, what are you guys looking at and watching for this week? John, since you're our guest, I'm going to go to Seth first to give you more opportunity to think of stuff.
We've talked a lot about the West. I'm actually looking at the East just in terms of a lot of the teams out there are kind of dealing with some health stuff. I mean, the Giannis has missed what, 6 games in a row for Milwaukee, and they're being very sort of tight-lipped about what's going on there. Obviously, like, Brooklyn has had guys in and out of the lineup, and now, you know, we're recording this on Thursday, unfortunately, but I guess fortunately for him, LaMarcus Aldridge, like, retired today because of an irregular heartbeat. So, and you don't want to lump that in with, like, kind of normal injury stuff, but, you know, the teams in the East who think that they are in this are seeing if they start to get some guys back and sort of build some rhythm towards, you know, what is shaping up to be an interesting, I would say, probably 3-way race at the top of the East still.
Yeah. John, what are you looking at?
I'm actually looking further down in the Eastern Conference because while 3 teams have clearly run away with at the top, there's a very interesting battle when you look at 4, 5, 6, 7, avoiding the play-in between teams who thought they would be contending at the top 3. If you look at Boston, if you look at Miami, Toronto certainly thought they'd be way better than this. And then you have the insurgence where Atlanta has made a big run and now they're in fourth. And can the Hawks be a team that, you know, can they be a home court first round team? Can they win a playoff series maybe? Or are they actually not as good as Boston and Miami, especially as we get toward the second half? You know, Fournier comes in for Boston. Miami has additions. Like, are they going to start to make a move, or are they just going to, I mean, these were our Eastern Conference finalists last year, right?
Right.
And they just all year, they just haven't been there at all. They've just been mediocre teams. And so can they make some kind of run here? And the reason I'm looking at that, even though I don't think they can realistically win the East, is because I think whatever happens with them also has really important implications for what happens this offseason.
Yeah, and it's interesting. All 3 of us are staying East. I'm actually going to be focused in on Boston here for this week. It's funny. They're going on a nice run. They've won, I think, 6 of their last 7 at this point. They play the Lakers tonight, so they should win that game. We'll assume they do. But this reminds me of their West Coast trip when they had Kyrie and everything was hunky-dory after a plane flight and everybody got along, and then everything crashed to the earth relatively quickly after that. So I'm curious to see if this is just sort of a reincarnation of this, or are the Celtics beginning to turn this around in what has been a fairly disappointing season for them.
When you first said you were staying in the East, I was really hoping you were going to say you were focused on the race for 12th between Cleveland and Orlando.
It is interesting. It is interesting. And not so much.
Is it too early to start talking about the Chicago-Orlando trade again? Or should we save that for another another week?
Them losing to Orlando was a little bit of a red flag, right?
Well, I'm also like, Wendell Carter Jr. has looked, you know, a little bit more
pretty
like
good.
The player. Yeah, looked a little more like the player. And you know, I didn't think that trade was fully for this year only for Chicago, but it certainly hasn't done much for them. And actually, we just, as we're recording this, it's Zach LaVine's going to be out 7 to 10 because he's now in the health and safety protocols.
Ooh, so wow.
that probably sends them the wrong way.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. It's funny because you're right. Like, it just proves though that sometimes guys just need that change of scenery, a different opportunity. You know, getting Wendell Carter into Orlando, into a system where, hey, we're just going to give you a ton of time. And you don't have to look over your shoulder when you make a mistake, and let's see what you got. I think it'll be interesting to see how his career kind of progresses from there.
A coach who's saying, hey, let's see what you got, instead of, hey, don't do that, which seemed like a lot of his first couple of years in the league was sort of, a lot of the things that we liked about him in terms of his, you know, perimeter versatility, especially seemed to be like, coached out of him a little bit, and well, just getting the freedom to try stuff again. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, folks, that'll do it for today's show. Thanks for checking us out. I'm Mo. That's Dave. John, thank you for joining us. And wow. Whoa.
What? Wow.
You just called him Dave.
Wow. Because I was going to take a shot here at Dave. And I was going to make a joke saying that, you know, we had to have John on because he's bald, so to replace Dave was where my mind was going. So let's try that again. I'm Mo. That is Seth. John, thank you for filling in for Dave.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. That's it, folks.
There we go. Leave it in, Jade.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.